Hi friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where this season I've talked to men and women who are walking forward by faith, many through difficult circumstances. We've asked the question together, how does God meet us in our deepest, darkest pain, and how does He turn that pain into beauty? We've heard about faith and hope in the midst of depression and divorce and everyday life and work. Today, I'm sharing a bonus episode of By Faith called Ask Me Anything. Listeners like you send in questions for me to tackle, and so I asked my friend Amy to join me for the conversation as I attempt to answer them. You'll hear us talk about how I do what I do, how I've responded when a friendship has faded away, how the church can be a safe place for those who are hurting, and about writing and pursuing passions. Make sure you listen all the way to the end to hear what I have planned for season 2 of the podcast and for a very special mini season this summer. Okay, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with my friend Amy as we answer your questions. I'm super excited to have one of my really good friends, Amy Dodd, here with me for my Ask Me Anything episode. Hi, Amy.
Hey. Thanks for letting me join you.
Well, I want everybody to know how wonderful you are.
Oh, goodness.
And so tell us
how long do you have? I'm just kidding.
So tell me about you and your life. Or I already know, but tell the people who are listening about you and your life.
I work for Athletes in Action, which is a sports ministry, international sports ministry, that works with coaches and athletes. So I work at University of Virginia and been here 6 years in Charlottesville and just love what I do, being able to work with athletes and help them understand the gospel, live that out in class, in their relationship, on the field, and then engage with their teammates and sharing the gospel.
That's great. So what does a typical day look like for you?
Typical day on campus or on grounds at UVA, meeting with athletes, engaging with them, discipling them, leading Bible studies, having a large group meeting, like a normal campus ministry, except for you have to work around the schedules of athletes and their practices and games.
You go to a lot of games, too.
I do.
Almost every week, you're like, I'm going to a tennis match, I'm going to rowing, I'm going to... Yeah. What do you go? Softball, volleyball, basketball. I mean, you're always going to games.
Yeah.
Supporting your athletes.
Encouraging them, yeah.
What do you love about working with Athletes in Action?
I love seeing the Lord transform their life.
Yeah.
Like, I love, it is so joy-filled and exciting to see them actually grasp the gospel.
Yeah.
And live in that.
What I see you get most excited when you have gotten to share the gospel with an athlete, or when they're asking questions about anything related to faith or issues of faith, it seems like you love that the most.
Yeah, I think I get really, I didn't realize that until maybe a couple years ago that I get really jazzed.
That's an Amy word.
Sharing the gospel. Yeah. And just hitting, I think a lot of the athletes, forgiveness is a kind of a big touch point.
What do you mean?
Well, like, they don't understand that they're forgiven or what they've done is not too much. Like God will forgive what they've done. Like, it's not too much for God to handle.
Mm.
And so they get really, almost like, teary-eyed, basically.
Mm.
When we talk about Lord's forgiveness and His wrath that goes on Jesus for their... in their place.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I get to watch what you do, sort of. I mean, I meet some of your athletes, and I'm not there with you for a lot of things that you do, but I love watching you do what you do.
Yeah.
You do a good job. I mean, you're just so faithful in the everyday plowing and planting seeds and, you know, teaching students. I love getting to see you live your life.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So, we're coming up on the end of season 1 of the By Faith podcast. We've had a lot of guests, some of whom you have known personally as well. What has been your favorite episode?
There are so many. I love your podcast. I think it's awesome. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friend.
Thanks for listening.
I feel like you're really good at it. You're a very good question asker.
Thanks. I love asking questions, as you know.
I know. And you're a really good listener. So I think it just hits all of your strengths. Okay, but my favorite... Oh, that's so hard. I'd probably go all the way back to your first one.
Zach Eswine.
He is... I could listen to him for hours.
Yes.
I feel like he has that voice. Plus, he has so much wisdom.
Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed your conversation.
Yeah.
So I feel like I get to sit and listen in on all these different conversations that you're having. And
yeah.
Like, I don't have to be the one asking questions or coming up with the questions because you do that. So.
Yeah, I liked that one too. I think he's super wise, but the way he says things is in a way that I haven't. I guess the word choices he uses and the phrases, it's like, makes it new.
Yeah.
I just ordered one of his books that I've never read before, Spurgeon's Sorrows, about depression.
I haven't heard that one.
Just because I'm interested to see what he would say about that. And I'm prone toward melancholy a little bit. Not depression, I wouldn't say. But I was just like, I want to know what he would say about that. Especially counseling other people who are dealing with things like that.
Yeah.
Any other favorites?
Yes. I loved your conversation with Taylor Harris.
Yeah.
She's one of my friends. Plus, you were talking about my home, Charlottesville, and the events on August 12th, which impacted all of us.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed hearing her experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an important conversation to have. And so I loved that y'all went there, that you brought up just the racial tensions that we have and like the uncomfortableness to engage with that.
Yeah.
And so I loved that episode.
I did too. I keep thinking about some of the things she said, like the Doritos, you know, we don't sit on the couch eating Doritos waiting for Jesus to come back. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I love how she was talking a lot about like repentance and confession and how that is a must that we have to engage. If we're going to engage, like, that is kind of the first step.
Yeah.
And I love how she said it's just one relationship at a time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not this massive, okay, let's go out and totally change Charlottesville, but it's like, okay, who can I engage with that doesn't look like me, that doesn't come from the same background or have the same culture as me?
Yeah.
So
I like how she said that we don't, If something is wrong, we don't tell people to be quiet about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, if her child breaks her arm, she doesn't say, shh, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a very common thing we say about this. Well, if people bring up racial things, racial issues, we just say, well, you're causing division by talking about it. Let's just move on. And I thought that was a really good analogy that she shared. So, yeah, I met Taylor. I have actually not met her in person, but I'm going to soon because they're moving back. Right. But I was connected with her through you and through some of your friends. So I'm thankful for that.
Well, when you get together, can you invite me? I want to hang out with
you. Yeah, that would be fun. That'd be really fun.
Wait, can I say another one that I really love?
Yeah.
Kathy Lynn.
Oh!
She is awesome.
I know.
She's a firecracker. But what she has to say and like her experience with grief, and it was kind of a hard episode to listen to.
Really? Why is
but
that?
But it was good. It was just really heavy. I felt like maybe not. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what she's experienced.
Just the thought of how do you help someone in grief and loss? And I think a lot of times we don't do it right. And so I think that one was a really good one.
Yeah. That's actually something somebody asked in the questions that we'll probably get to at some point. But
what were your favorites? Are you allowed to have a favorite?
Well, I think I liked all of them for one reason or another. But the ones that I keep thinking about are Taylor's about race. I really liked the conversation with my husband where he talked about work because I've been pretty discouraged this spring and couldn't kind of pinpoint why, I don't think, but listening to him share his thoughts, and of course I get them at home too, but having it all together like that was really encouraging to me, to just think, you know what, I just need to keep going. There's no need to be discouraged. I like when he said, we have more reason to be encouraged than discouraged. So I liked that one. And I'm just thankful that people, a lot of these people are people I've known, are friends, and I was thankful that they were willing to share their stories, because some of these stories I've known, and part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is because I do get to hear stories from people. As a pastor's wife, I get to hear, and some of these aren't people in our church, but they're friends, but I get to hear their stories, and I know what God has done, but I wanted to share with other people that it's possible that God can redeem really difficult things. Mm-hmm. And so my friend Anna, who shared about her husband having an affair.
Yeah.
My friend Jamie, who has dealt with alcohol dependence. Mm-hmm. Those stories, I'm really thankful they were willing to share with not just me, but everyone who listens to it.
I feel like they're really courageous.
Yeah.
And allowing other people to see the Lord's redemption, because if you're going to allow other people to see God's redemption in your life, you have to show where you were.
Yes.
To start with. And that's a really hard, I think, hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like, being vulnerable is really hard. And when they're able to do that for any kind of audience that's going to listen.
Yeah. I think that's when you know that you've fully walked through redemption, is when you are not just willing to share it, but excited to share it, because you know what God has done and you want other people to know. It doesn't matter. You don't have the shame attached to it anymore.
Yeah, there's freedom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
So a lot of people have asked some questions of you. It's fun to be just kind of the voice of the listeners here, represent the people. So one of the questions being, you do so much in your everyday and your 24 hours, but how do you juggle everything from being a mom, cleaning, being a writer, now a podcaster? Is that a word?
I think so.
Podcaster? Okay. Podcaster. Being a wife and a pastor's wife. So how do you juggle all of these hats, all of these roles in a week, in a day?
Yeah.
Give us your secret.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't have a secret. One thing is that I don't clean that often. So cleaning has gone out the window. I straighten everything. If you came in, it would look clean, right?
It looks great.
As we're sitting in my house right now. But I don't clean that often. Deep clean. And so there are some things that have gone out the window as I have pursued some of the things I'm doing. I would say also, let me just say from the beginning, I think God gifts us for what he calls us to do. And I don't have some of the gifts that other people do. When I look at what other people do in their day or in their month or their life, I'm not built for that. And so it stresses me out to think about, for example, writers who travel a lot. I get stressed out just watching them on Instagram go the places they're going, because I'm not built for that. And so it's hard for me to understand how they do that. And sometimes, to be honest, I can be judgmental about that, thinking, oh, are they really following the Lord's call in their life? But of course, that's not mine to judge, but I can't assume that they're built the same way I am. So God has built me for what he's called me to do. And how I see that is, I have always tended to have a higher capacity to just do things. Now, I'm an introvert, and so people things are more draining to me. But task things, I can do a lot in a small amount of time. And that's just how God's built me. And so I also am a scheduled person. I'm a planner. I map out my day. Well, not every day, but I have kind of a rhythm every day, and I work that plan. And so all those things fit together to help me to accomplish what I know is God's call in my life. And so in the morning, I get up early before my kids and spend time with the Lord. And then my kids go to school. I mean, that helps. Let's be honest. My kids are not at home anymore. I'm not homeschooling. And so that gives me the window that I need to write and do the podcast and do ministry within our church that happens during that time. And so, and that's not a lot. I would say primarily my time is writing and podcasting, but also teaching at our Bible study occasionally with our church or meeting with people. So that all happens within the school day, all of it. Yeah. So that when my kids come home, I'm mom and we're doing homework and I'm cooking and spending time with my husband once he gets home and driving kids, the ages they are, I'm always in the car. So I kind of have a rhythm for each day that works for me. And if I can't accomplish in the school day my work, I don't, it has to go to the next day. So I kind of keep things compartmentalized and that's how I do it. But I also plan out. As you know, I'm sure I drive people crazy around that are friends of mine. And one of our mutual friends is very spontaneous. And I cannot be spontaneous because everything is pretty mapped out. And I try to be when it comes to friends, I try to be. But I really am thinking ahead even for the month. These are the things that I need to get done. And how am I going to make sure that I have enough space in that time to get it all done? But I do want to reiterate that people are built differently.
Yeah.
And people have different callings on their lives. You know, there's just some things that I've had to let go of and think, you know what? I'm just not going to put my focus on those things.
Yeah. I mean, your house doesn't look dirty.
Don't look too closely. Well, also I would say I don't write all the time. I write a book. Mm-hmm. And then I take 2 years off.
Yeah.
So everything is kind of in a season. Like for a year, I'm going to only be writing a book. I'm not going to be doing anything else. Planning the podcast ahead. So I can just write. I don't teach in the years that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of has a season. And it seems probably to people on the outside that I'm doing all that at the same time, but I'm not. Yes. I'm not doing it all at the same time.
Well, we have a question here on friendship, which I don't think you've hit in your podcast, besides having friends who you've interviewed or asked questions.
I think Jamie and I talked a little bit about friendship.
Oh, yes.
Remember that. We talked about how we were in the same place, but we were not very vulnerable with each other. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I learned from her, actually. But yes, friendship.
The question is, have you ever had a friendship that faded away, like out of your control in that type of situation? And how did you deal with the pain or grieving that friendship?
Yeah, I think this happens a lot for women and men, I'm sure. But I can speak for women, I guess. But I think this happens a lot. And sometimes it's because people move or there are changes in their life situation where the friendship isn't what it was, right? I've had plenty of those. And I think sometimes there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong that has happened as far as I know. And I haven't felt that something was wrong, but things have changed. And I do think there is a sense of grief in that of just what we wish it would be, what we wish we could keep all friendships for all of time and they would never change, right? And so I think there is a sense of just what I would say is longing attached to friendship.
Yes. Actually, I loved that part of your book.
Yes. Longing. Yeah. I think there's a part that's just when we recognize that friendships cannot be perfect and that there is a sense of separation, even amongst our really good friendships, there are just times where one person isn't doing well or a person moves. And so I think we have to acknowledge that there's, even in our best friendships, there's a sense of longing that it can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. And that points us to heaven. That points us to a time when that longing will be fulfilled. And I think that longing is implanted in us so that we seek eternity and we seek a time when it will all be made right. And so I'm not saying it's easy when a friendship shifts or changes, but I think that we need to acknowledge it, that it's the reality of it is it's going to happen in probably every friendship we have, there's going to be some shifting. And acknowledge that that's painful. We wish it wasn't so, but then let it, that longing, point us to a time when we won't be separated and we won't have sin that hinders our relationships, right? Yeah. And so I think we let that pain be what it is and take it to the Lord and know that He loves us perfectly. We always have His presence. He's always with us. We're never going to be separated from Him. And so we can cling to Him and take our griefs to Him and just acknowledge it for what it is, but not let that keep us from relationships in the future, right?
Yeah.
And also, I think, you know, just I saw one of my good friends this week from college, and she was my roommate. Her husband is my husband's good friend, and so they have seen each other. They've made a point of seeing each other a lot. And for whatever reason, she and I haven't. But in the past few years, we've reconnected, and we've really said to one another, this is an important relationship, and it, because we've known each other so long, and we are, she's also a pastor's wife, and so we just really connect on that level. We both have three boys, so we really connect on that level, and she's just somebody I can, we did pick back up with, and so I think sometimes there may be separation that we feel, but maybe we need to make an effort to reach back across that divide and say, this is important to me. And I would say only when we sense, you know, if we sense this could be really important to them too, and it's just maybe distance or life situations that have changed it, like reach back across that divide and actually say out loud, this relationship has been really important to me, and I really would like to connect with you more than we have. And we did that last summer. I saw her, and we had this whole conversation where I kind of said that to her, and it's risky to say that. But I said that to her, and she's like, I feel the same way. And we really have made an effort to stay in better communication. So I do think sometimes we don't just say, oh, it's gone, oh well. But no, this is important to me, and I'm not going to let it go. And I think there are some times where we do have separation because something has gone wrong.
Right.
And we don't always know what that is. Sometimes people are going through something and we don't know it, and it affects the way that they are in friendship. And we automatically think it's our fault. Like, we've done something. There could be times where you haven't done something. And so I think it's worth a conversation. If it's a super important friendship, it prayerfully consider having a conversation. Because maybe you'll learn something about yourself. You didn't know you were hurting that person. And you have an opportunity to apologize and to learn about yourself. And that is so hard. Nobody, I mean, I don't want to have those conversations, but it's worth it. It's worth it. And there may be something that they're going through and they are able to share that. I mean, I do think it's a prayerful question. And that there's just times where the friendship is just going to change, and that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So some of these other questions are coming out of a few of the different podcasts and guests that you've had on this season. Two in particular, Sean Groves, when you were talking about depression, and then BJ Garrett, who experienced a lot of sin against her.
Yeah.
And they both mentioned in some way or another that the church can be one of the worst places to go when you're experiencing difficulties. Mm. And maybe BJ said it a little bit more indirectly, but when she was talking about Jesus-loving parents, that they didn't want their children to be around her because of possibly her influence on them.
Yeah.
But when really those are the people that need the church the most and need community and need to experience God's love and grace in ways that we're maybe afraid to show it because of the way that they may rub off on me.
Right.
And so this can sound a little discouraging, especially from the people in the church. And so what is our role in that, and how do you parent in those situations? How do you live and love others, but also maintain a great space for your boys to grow up? And
well, I think it's such a good question. I think that's great that the listener asked this question and heard those common threads. And I think also Kathy Litton as well shared about responding to people who are grieving, and how sometimes people say things that are a little more hurtful than helpful. And so I think it's good for us as Christians to think about this question. And I'm glad this person brought up this question. I think that the depression and what BJ shared about sexual abuse and sexual sin are two different issues. And the way we respond, one is depression is, I would say, let's think of that in terms of deep suffering that someone's walking through. To be a safe person for them in the church is, one, we have to be in deep relationships enough to know that that's what's happening. And a lot of times when we're not in deep relationships with someone, this happens for me a lot in our church where someone is around, but they seem really hard to know, right? And I've learned enough now to know that usually something is happening behind that. So I think as a church, how can we be a safe place for those people is just the culture of the church in general. Are we cultivating a church culture where somebody can say they're not doing okay and people are not surprised by that? That they know that everybody has something. Everybody has something and is struggling through, even if it's just to put one foot in front of the other, right? And so we have to keep that in the forefront of our minds, that to not be surprised that people are struggling or suffering in some way. And so we want to be a place where people can be in deep, vulnerable relationships. And we all play a part in creating that culture. That's hard. And it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard place to be because we don't want to be vulnerable sometimes. But I would say that happens at the small group level of church, of just being a place where people can say, I'm really struggling right now, and that people don't give trite answers. See, mm-hmm. I think as Christians, we get scared. First of all, I think we have wrong theology sometimes of that if they're struggling through, that they're doing something wrong, right? And we don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
But in reality, that's not the case. You know, we want to be willing to listen instead of give advice. I think that's the biggest thing, is when we're in a small group situation, we're building a church culture that we're listeners, that we're question askers, that we're not trying to fix people when they are saying, this is where I'm at. Let's ask more questions about that and build a relationship to where you can speak what's true when it's appropriate and it's at the right time. And so to me, that's the biggest thing, is just that we wouldn't be shocked. We wouldn't be surprised. We would ask good questions, follow up with people, just be in relationship and not trying to fix people or move them along quickly because it makes us uncomfortable. And we think that if they were good Christians, they wouldn't be in this situation. And that's not the case. But with BJ and when she was talking about she was talking about as a kid that she was around other kids, Christian kids, and their families weren't wanting her around, really. And I think that's really, really hard. But I think that comes a little bit back to what I just said, that we want to teach our kids that this is the reality of life, is that people are struggling, including, and you will, child, at some point, face something that's difficult. And so how are you going to respond to that? At the deepest level, we all are sinners and we need Jesus. And that's the case for everyone. But I'm thinking for my kids, they're not going to be the primary ones that are communicating that. So how can we connect with the family as a whole? And they see us interacting with people who are different than us or people who are struggling, that we actually, without giving too many details, we say, you know, so-and-so is having a hard time right now. Let's pray for them. Or dad, as a pastor, he's gone because he's helping a family who's really struggling. You don't need to know the name and you don't need to know the issue, but we can pray for them. We want to communicate to our kids that this is life, and it's your life too. Just because you are in a Christian home doesn't mean you're exempt from pain and suffering. And so we're teaching them in some way how to respond not only to people around them, but also how to respond when they face their own issues.
I think a lot of times we try to put on a persona of, I have everything together, put together, this is me. But really, deep down, like, we really want to be known and loved. And so, in order to be really known and loved, you have to be vulnerable and share the things you're struggling with and engage with others in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say we want to be able sharing our costs with each other. What is it costing you to follow Jesus? Mm. It's costing everybody something. Yeah. Everybody. And for some people, it's really, really, really difficult things. And if we're sharing that with each other, then we all know we're in it together and we have each other's support. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important to...
That's why my students, be involved in the local church.
Yes.
Be known. Serve.
Yeah. A church that feels like family, not just a church that, you know, I mean, that's what I want for our church, is that we would feel like a family where we love you and we're with you no matter what, you know?
Yeah. Celebrate with you.
Yeah.
Mourn with you.
Yes.
I'm in.
Let's do it.
I'm in. Okay. Well, going along those lines, so how do you engage the people in your church about racism?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I would just say that I am very much still learning this. I don't feel like I know. I'm still wrapping my mind around the problem, okay? So I don't have a lot of solutions, but I do think it's important that we talk about it. And so how I'm choosing to engage this is, one, I did the podcast episode because I wanted to engage this issue, but that's not just on the podcast. It's because it's something that I'm engaged with in our church and in my friendships and with my husband talking about these things. And so I think it's something that we have to talk about, but it doesn't have to be a political thing. I don't see this as a political thing. I mean, I know there are things politically, it is affected by the political situation. But I don't think talking about it makes it a political issue. I think it's a gospel issue, meaning that if we have received grace and forgiveness in Christ, and that is the one way for every single person who is a sinner, every single person is a sinner, every single person comes to Jesus by faith, and God receives us and adopts us as his own, that doesn't just sit with you. That, like, goes in and then explodes out, right? You're going to then respond. God's grace teaches us how to live. And one of the things it teaches us is how we relate to other people, that we love people and that we see them the way God sees them. And so it's a gospel issue. It's not a political issue. And I think we have to say it like that so that there are people who they don't want to hear it, or they say, oh, that's political. You're getting too political or whatever. I've never had anybody say that to me. But I know people think that way. But I just want to engage the conversation. And we're doing that in ways locally through our church. We're having those conversations in our church with preaching. It's not a constant conversation, but it is when we have opportunity. The elders are speaking to that. But then also, we're organizing conversations about this issue and trying to learn. We're trying to build relationships with people within our community of different denominations and ethnicities to learn from them and to just be engaged so that when something like what happened in our community happens again, that we don't have to say, well, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do, because we already have the relationships. So that's how we're engaging it. And my kids are hearing us talk about that, and they're seeing who sits at our table. And, you know, we talk about these things with them.
I totally agree. It's a gospel issue. I was challenged, or maybe convicted, I don't know what the right word is, last month of it being not just a head issue or to always think about it or to engage, but more so like, Am I following after God's heart for this? Mm. Is my heart being affected when he's being affected about how people are being treated and under what circumstance? And so I'm like, does my prayer life consist of praying for other people, for praying for myself, and being able to recognize and notice. So seeing when injustice happens and seeing other people, or am I overlooking it? And then am I trying to understand it?
Mm-hmm.
Am I mm-hmm. trying to understand it on a heart level and then act on that?
Mm-hmm.
And so following the Lord's lead in that, like, he's not going to leave us stranded with, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? Who am I going to talk to? It's like, if it's on your heart, if the Lord puts that desire in your heart to engage with other people, which I hope he's doing with everyone, of going to him and asking him, like, he's going to give you opportunities.
Absolutely.
Like, I think there are a lot of times when I'm like, okay, well, now I have to go do this and I have to go do that and I have to make sure my schedule is free on Saturday so I can go here in this part of town and do this. And it's more of like, okay, Lord, what do you want to weave into my life right now where I can see things a little bit differently and I can engage with somebody a little bit differently and see a different side of you, of your creation, of your
yeah.
beauty,
yes.
recognize your goodness in a different way. And am I willing to learn in that?
Yeah. It's definitely having relationships, as you know, relationships with other people in town, African-Americans in town, has taught me to, it's opened my eyes to just, who am I engaging with as I go about my life? And I'm much more aware of people, much mm-hmm. more aware of people I might have overlooked before. And I feel like it's just even kindness. I mean, hopefully I wasn't unkind, but just showing kindness to people and seeing them,
mm-hmm.
looking them in the eye, greeting them. You know, those are simple things, but it's taught me to see and look for people I might have overlooked before.
Okay, we have some more writing questions.
Okay.
There's a lot of writers out there.
Yeah.
Which is great. This woman writes in, I enjoy writing, although I don't have tons of time for it as a full-time working mom of young kids. I struggle with whether I should pursue writing more because there are already so many writers, and I worry that it's just a way to be self-obsessed. Do I really have something worth saying, or do I just like hearing myself talk? So she's wondering, do you have any advice on that?
Well, I can relate. I can relate to that question, and I think it's a good question to ask of yourself. Because as I was pursuing writing, or as I would say, not pursuing it, but thinking about it, it felt like an urge trying to get out of me. Like there was something inside of me just trying to get out, right? And I thought, this is ridiculous for me to say out loud, I am a writer, or I want to be a writer. I felt so dumb. Like if I said that out loud, people are going to laugh in my face.
Why did you feel that way?
Because who, first of all, do I have anything worth saying? Second, it just seems like that would be self-indulgent for me to give my time to something where it's like, huh. Here, everybody look at what I've written, right?
Have you thought about that about other writers? I mean, you can answer that if you don't have to answer that.
No, because you pick up a book and you think, this person knows what they're doing. That they know for sure that God has called them to do this. And they are a good writer. But when you look at yourself, you think, Who am I to think I would have anything to offer? And my main question was, I had small children when I started writing. And it came from a conversation with my husband where I was in tears saying, I want to write. And he said, well, why don't you? Why don't you spend time doing that? On my day off, I'll take the kids. You go for an hour or two to Starbucks and just write. And I thought, I can't do that. That's not worth my time. I should be doing laundry. I should be doing something that's tangible and that's productive and that actually is worth something. Because it doesn't seem like it's worth cultivating, I guess, is what I would say. And so, and even once I finally said, okay, I really do, I want to do this. And at the time, I couldn't have said God had called me to do it. I just knew that it was like an urge. You know, I really want to do this. I want to just see what it is. And so I started. And I would go for an hour or two to Starbucks, and I would spend almost the entire time working through this question. Why am I doing this? This is stupid. Wow. I have nothing to say. And but that process of through those years of just quiet, unseen writing is when God did all the work in my heart to show me, first of all, that he had put that in me. And so it's a form of worship for me to do what he's created me to do. But it took me a while to come to really be able to say that out loud, that I am a writer and that God had called me to do this. It took me a long time to get there. And so it did feel like self-obsessed and self-indulgent. But at the same time, God was refining my heart and showing me my motivations, because some of them were self-obsessed and self-indulgent. Why am I writing? Who am I thinking about when I write? Who am I doing it for? All those questions were answered in those, in that wrestling. Not that I don't ever still wrestle with that. I still wrestle with that. But I think that's a good question to ask. And if you do, God will show you. He will convict you. He will show you. No, I need you to be, I want you to spend your time elsewhere, or keep going. Don't give up. And that's for me what it was. Keep going. Don't give up.
I love when you talk about how God has given you a passion for writing and how it is worship.
Yes.
What God gives you passions and desires.
Yeah.
And then he allows you to like grow in them and bear fruit in those areas. It's so beautiful. I love it.
Well, thank you.
Part of what what I'm passionate about is seeing others in their wheelhouse, seeing others in their sweet spot. So, I mean, that's why Athletes in Action. I get to see people living out their passions as athletes, being gifted and being able to cheer them on in the process. And so that's the same with you, of like being gifted in writing and putting together thoughts that I barely can put together anything. So I'm thankful for people like you. And I think you mentioned that in your book, Searching for Spring, and how it's just, it's worship.
Yeah.
It's glorifying him. It's putting his name above your own.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that you brought up, I think you're a great cheerleader for other people, but sometimes when we're doing these things, we can't see it clearly, but other people will say, oh yeah, you're clearly gifted for that. Or clearly God has given you this passion. But for us, it feels just natural. It's like, well, this, doesn't everyone feel this way?
Yes. Yeah.
And then they don't. And so I think we need people outside of us to go, like what I was saying earlier about you with evangelism, you clearly are passionate about it, but you don't always see that about yourself, because it's just who you are. And you think everyone feels that way. It's not, and they don't.
Yeah.
And so we need our friends to say, hey, do you realize that this is unique about you and God has put that there for a reason? So cultivate it.
Yeah.
So I would say to this person who's like, I don't know if I should do this. Well, what are the people around you saying? You know, and not just your mom who thinks everything you do is great.
Oh, no.
But what are people pointing out in your life? Mm-hmm. Like, God is really using you with that. Which means with writing, you have to put it out there.
Ooh. That's hard.
Yeah, and that's why it is hard, because you have to put yourself out there a little bit. And
that's why I write under a pseudonym.
You do?
No, just kidding.
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling. Yeah, that's actually
that's me. Your pseudonym. Yeah. Pseudonym.
Well, then the other side of the spectrum here of like, how do you know when writing or blogging or your passion, whatever God has given you, becomes too high on the priority list?
That's also a good question. And I have seen that in my own life. And I would say the one way I know that is when I feel restless, when I feel like I'm not doing enough, but when I feel like I'm aiming for something that I can never actually get. So when my motivations, in other words, turn into being about me, I'm using this gift for myself. Or I did this. You know, I've cultivated this. I've built this. Anytime I'm thinking like that, I get really restless, because if I've built it, I have to maintain it. And if I have, if it's about me, then it doesn't matter what reviews or accolades or responses I get, it's never enough. I always have to have more. Those two things that I recognize, it takes me a while sometimes to recognize that that's what's happening, but I generally sense it as restlessness, that I'm either taking on too much and trying to do too many things and I'm not trusting the Lord with it, or when I am let's just be honest. When I'm on Instagram comparing myself to other writers, or if I'm looking on Amazon at rankings and reviews, something's gone wrong. It's become too much about me. And that is, those are temptations with any passion that we have, that it becomes about us and what we want out of it, and that we did it. And God is always so good to bring me back to a place saying, did you put the air in your lungs? Are you making yourself breathe right now? Are you sustaining the universe? No. And I have given you everything you have as a gift for me. And so use it for my glory. And that's when you will be most at peace, because you will trust me with it, and you will rest when it's time to rest. But you will also enjoy getting to cultivate and actually doing the work, not just looking for the results from the work. So I think our passions become too much when we get twisted up, and or if we're given too much time and attention, and we're letting other things, we're neglecting other things besides cleaning. And that's when we know. Usually it takes me a while to realize that's what's happening, but it starts with restlessness.
That's what I love. You know yourself so well.
No, not really.
And I think you do. Like, I think you know, like, when you're going on the downward spiral. I think
I do. It usually takes me a while to figure out why.
Yeah. But you're like, you know some of those triggers.
Yeah.
And you know God's word and his character. And when that starts going awry in your mind, like, you come back to that. And then God reveals more of who you are in him. And then you just keep...
And a lot of repentance,
putting Amy. One foot in front of the other.
A lot of repentance.
Yeah. I just love this. Can I come back on?
I'm just kidding. Yep, you can. No,
yeah, right. You're not going to ask me back. Well, looking ahead, you're going to continue to podcast,
I hope. Yes, I am.
Okay.
You know what? I started this just in conjunction with the book Searching for Spring that came out, because I wanted to hear real stories of real people who were putting this into practice, right?
Yeah.
As soon as I started, I was like, I love this. This combines everything I love. Questions, one-on-one conversations, stories, and like really getting to the heart of somebody's life. I love that.
Yes.
And so as soon as I started, I thought, I think I want to keep going. So I am going to keep going. And I am going to have seasons, because it's hard in the summer with my kids at home. I do take a break from all things. So I'm going to end this season, take a little break, and I've already started recording a mini season I'm going to do for Pastor's Wives.
Oh.
That's going to come out this summer, probably in July. And it's going to be maybe a 5-week series just dealing with what are some of the issues that pastor's wives face. And talking to some really, really neat women about how they navigate that. So we're going to talk about marriage and ministry. We're going to talk about kids. We're going to talk about some of the hurts that we face. We're going to talk about how we can make the most of our role and use the influence God has given us. And stuff like that. So people send in questions. I got so many questions when I asked, "What Pastor's Wives, what do you want to talk about?" I was going to do 1 week.
Yeah.
And it ended up becoming a mini season. Wow. So, and then in the fall, I'm also already interviewing people. We're going to do a whole season on friendship. That's going to be really fun.
Wow.
So maybe you'll have to come back. Yeah, we talked a little bit about it, but man, when I wrote that book on friendship, I realized when I sat down to kind of outline what I was going to do, there is so much you could say. And I couldn't do it in one book. And there's so many different situations and circumstances and angles and things that come up. I mean, there is so much that we could say. And so that's why I'm going to do a whole season on friendship. So we're going to talk about men and friendships, like men who are listening. We're going to talk about male friendships, and we're going to talk about celebrating our friends instead of comparing with them. Mm-hmm. How do we make friends?
That's a hard one.
That's not true. You're so good at making friends. But anyway, we're going to talk about a lot of things. But I already have an idea for a season after that.
Can you tell us that?
No, because I don't. Okay.
We can talk later.
Yeah, we can talk later. I'm super full of ideas, but it's actually.
Yes, you are.
Planning them out and doing the work that once I get started, I'm like, oh no, that idea was good, but I don't know if I should have taken that on. But I don't feel that way about this podcast, so.
Well, I'm looking forward, even though I'm not a pastor's wife, I'm looking forward to that series. Am I allowed to listen to that? Even though I'm not a pastor's wife?
Let's... You're a pastor's kid.
I am.
Yeah, you're allowed to listen. I think it would be helpful for people who aren't pastor's wives to listen and see, these are the things pastor's wives are thinking about.
I was going to say that. You stole what I was going to say. No. Yeah, I think it'd be informational for me of just how to relate to my pastor's wife, how to encourage, how to be there for her, when to step away.
Well, don't step away, because I am your pastor's wife.
Give her space. No. So I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about that, because I know you're very passionate about that. And
yeah, I love to encourage pastor's wives.
I know. Whenever you go to teach in a pastor's wife scenario, you always get really jazzed. So you always get really excited, and I'm like, okay, I think that's another little passion.
Yeah,
it's not little, sorry, another passion.
It is. It is a passion. So, well, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for letting me
rope you in.
You know, you and your questions.
Amy and I mentioned several of our favorite episodes from this season in our conversation. If you haven't had a chance to listen to them yet, they are linked in the show notes, but you can also find all the season one shows, as well as my writing and my books, on my website, gracecoversme.com. If you haven't picked up my new book, Searching for Spring, summer would be a great time to read it with a friend. I've actually put together a discussion guide that you can use with a book club or with a friend as you read it. You can find it under the books tab there on my website. Again, it's gracecoversme.com. I want to say thank you so much for listening to My Faith. Thank you to those who have submitted questions for today's episode, and also a big thank you to those who've chosen to support my work through my Patreon page. Season one has been so fun for me. I hope it has been for you. Friends, enjoy your summer. Meet me back here at the end of June, and until then, keep walking forward by faith.